Health and Social Services Committee to order at 3:33 p.m. on Tuesday, May the 2nd, 2023. We're in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Committee members present today are Senator Dunbar, Senator Diesel, Senator Kaufman, myself, Senator Wilson, Senator Tobin's on other state business, and we may see her momentarily. And we have a quorum to conduct business this afternoon. This afternoon, we only have one item of business, House Bill 60, Runaways, Department of Family and Community Services, Department of Health, Duties and Licensing and Info, which is sponsored by Senate Rules, requested the governor. Although we did hear the Senate companion, SB 59, on February 28th. It was our first hearing on this bill. The other body did make some changes, and so we're here to discuss some of those changes that the other body has made take consideration of this piece of legislation. Today, we have Courtney Enright, the Legislative Liaison, Department of Health, and Matt Davison, the Department of Family and Community Services, and Stacey Crowley of the Department of Law here to answer questions of the bill, and we'll get started. I guess we'll have the two Mr. Davison is here to present the bill. Mr. Davison, when you're ready, you can put yourself on the record and talk about the bill.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Matt Davidson. I'm a special assistant to the commissioner in the Department of Family and Community Services here on HB 60. HB 60 is a cleanup of the executive order from last legislature that split the Department of Health and Social Services into the Department of Health and the Department of Family and Community Services. As we talked about back in February, during the drafting of EO 121, the administration identified a couple of things that we couldn't do in an executive order, and this bill includes those. Those include adding the commissioner of the Department of Family and Community Services as an advisor to the Mental Health Trust Board. It's a statutory advisor, not a non-voting member. Also identified that we needed to tell the two departments to communicate protected information, confidential information, after we split, just as we did while we were one agency. And so there's a specific HIPAA-related language in the bill. After the implementation of EO 121, the departments identified a couple of mistakes, the things we missed in the drafting of EO 121. Those include mostly related to licensing. And so we've made drafting mistakes related to the licensing of runaway shelters. Those are properly licensed by the Department of Health, and licensing of foster homes, which are properly licensed by the Department of Family and Community Services. So that's version A of the bill. During the House committee hearings on HB 60, the Department of Law worked with legislative drafting and identified additional fixes related to licensing. So we did some cleanup related to the licensing, some more clarifying language related to licensing of runaway shelters. That happened in House Health and Social Services. In addition, we identified that we lacked adding the new department, one of the new departments, to the definition of what a department is in Title 18. So we've been operating like a department so far since July 1st, but we weren't included in the definition of what makes a department. And so those are the changes that happened in the House committee, and that was version S. And then on the floor of the House of Representatives, a floor amendment was adopted, adding some duties to the three entities that are licensed as runaway shelters related to human and sex trafficking. The new requirements, which these entities already accomplish, which is reporting to law enforcement when they have knowledge of or reports of human or sex trafficking, and then providing information and services to potential victims of sex trafficking in the bill. So that actually added one new section because we added the definition of human trafficking in the bill in section 9, and the changes that were added on the floor are included in section 8 of the bill in front of you. And that is a summary of changes, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Davidson. You said Section 9 off? Oh, there it is.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Section 8 of the bill has some changes on the floor. You'll see starting on line 25 added law enforcement as a being notified. And then on line 28, 30 adding human or sex trafficking. Continuing on to page 6, lines 14 through 17, explaining the new services that were expected to be added, and then the new definition, the new section 9.
Thank you. And for the record, we were joined by Senator Tobin from her other state business. Just one question before we get on. Question to Senator Dunbar. Have you contacted, you said you're currently already, providers are already doing this currently. Have the department reached out to any of the current providers just to make sure that this language is okay and it's applicable for them? There's no challenges for these runaway shelters?
Through the chair, to the chair. Yes, the Department of Health has reached out. And I haven't heard any negative comments. For example, one of these entities that's licensed is the Covenant House in Anchorage. They actually provide, I understand, services. They provide training on human and sex trafficking to state agencies and other agencies, so they're very well versed in this work. We're not knowledgeable about any concerns about these requirements.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just sort of curious if perhaps you already have, given that it now includes a mandatory reporting section involving law enforcement, has this bill gone or is it going to go to the Judiciary Committee?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, it has not gone to Judiciary Committee. The expectation, I can speak from the Department of Family and Community Services, so it's very common for mandatory reporters to report crimes to the Office of Children's Services, which is in Family and Community Services. Sometimes those crimes involve the parental caregivers, and then the Office of Children's Services, you know, begins their investigation, but also contacts law enforcement. So that's expected already in mandatory reporting that Office of Children's Services contacts law enforcement. The new duties that are included here is not added to mandatory reporting necessarily, but added to the licensing duties of these agencies. This section that's being amended is licensing, which is part of the Department of Health. So it's actually not mandatory reporting. It's an expectation of their license.
Yes, follow up. So did it include, I apologize, I should look at this section in more detail. What are the consequences if they are found to have violated this section? Will you, you know, is it one strike and you lose your license? Is it, what's the, how does it work?
To the chair, through the chair, Senator Dunbar, again, this is licensing. I think it's, I don't think that any of those scenarios you described are what's going to happen. These are agencies that are serving these youth, and they are mandatory reporters of child abuse and neglect already. This is an additional caveat. I don't think there's an extra burden. I don't think the licensing section would be expected to provide penalties based upon a lack of compliance.
I guess what are there consequences? I mean, there are consequences if you for licensing. I've gone through many child care licensing facility audits, but there are findings that someone can have if you're not in compliance, sort of like a JACO audit or any other audit from a licensing entity and correction. But I think Ms. Stacy Carley may looking to come up to answer a question.
Thank you. For the record, Stacy Carley, Division Director of the Civil Division of the Department of Law. Through the chair, Senator Dunbar and Chair Wilson, our licensing expert was supposed to be on the phone, so I'm going to kind of pitch hit here, so bear with me a little bit. The requirement that was added to the floor, just to be clear, was a notification to either the Office of Children's Services, if one of these runaway shelters has believes that a child that is there, a minor is there, is a victim of sex trafficking, the obligation is for them to report that to the Office of Children's Services or to law enforcement. It's an either or. They don't have to report to both. It's important to note that the existing statute already requires when a child comes into one of these facilities that the facility must notify the Office of Children's Services of their arrival so that the Office of Children's Services can provide support and hopefully help with reunification and get the family back into a cohesive unit so the child does not have to stay at the runaway shelter. So I just want to be very clear that that's the expectation under the amendment on the floor, okay? So as Matt, Mr. Davidson, has identified, the requirement is part of the licensing framework. And so if a facility failed to tell either OCS, Office of Children's Services, or law enforcement, that could be a violation that could be brought up against one of these facilities. And the violations range from, you know, a corrective action letter to a, you know, even less formal, a friendly reminder, don't forget you have to do this kind of a thing, to a formal letter, up to and including, you know, termination of your license or suspension of your license. This type of a violation would not lead to probably termination or licensure, but it could result, if reported to the licensing entity, with, you know, a review of their policies and their protocols to ensure that they were complying with the statute. It would be, unless it became egregious and repetitive and consistent, it wouldn't lead to kind of huge informal penalties against one of these facilities. But I'm going to be pretty clear. They don't have to report to law enforcement. They can report to OCS or law enforcement.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize if we covered this in prior, if it's part of the amendment, but now on page 6, subsection 7, they are required to provide an explanation materials to a minor on the signs and risk of human and sex trafficking. Are those materials that your department is going to develop, or where those materials come from?
through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I believe, as it was explained on the floor, that there was a report that was issued, and these runaway shelters were a part of this report, and this is part of the kind of core work that they do. And so Covenant House is kind of one of the preeminent experts on this issue. And so I would assume they would develop that material and other material that would be made available. But it's the same sort of thing that has been that would be given to a child who comes into one of these facilities to, you know, explain, you know, other services that might be available to them. So I don't think there's any sort of set requirement that this pamphlet versus this pamphlet or this information has been there. That will be, you know, decided through the policies and procedures of the facilities to assure that they are providing at least some context to these minors as to what to be aware of and how to handle these issues or what other resources are available to them should they be a victim of this activity.
Brief follow, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Dunbar.
This is a legal requirement that they do this. So is your agency going to review the materials for sufficiency?
through the chair, Senator Dunbar, yes, that's what happens. So as you license an entity or a facility, you would have a standard check, and you would go through their policies and procedures and review them to ensure that the information that they need to have to operate under the conditions of licensure are sufficient. So we would review those and would ascertain whether or not we felt that the information was, you know, sufficient or otherwise, and we'll work, you know, collaboratively with the providers to make sure the information is, you know, not only provided, but it's current, it's accurate, you know, and all the information is available upon request, you know, not only just upon request, but as an affirmative act.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I believe we just got a note, too, that I think the phone lines are all tied up. There's over 90 folks calling in another bill in this body during this time. So we apologize for not being able to have him online for committee members. Senator Tobin, did you have a? Okay. Are there any other questions from committee members? Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So sort of a global question. It's on page 6. I'm looking at section 8. It's the very end of section 8, and the new edition number 7, but also looking at the last phrase there in item 6, maintain adequate staffing, accommodations, etc. And then it goes down to line 12 where it says residents under 18 years of age shall be segregated. And then seven, you were just talking about the explanation of materials to a minor. So where does the consent come from to present these materials to someone who's under 18 years of age?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, there is a statute, and I'm going to pull it up, possibly, Alaska statute, I think it's 2522 something something. I'll have to get back with you, but it's there's a provision within the Alaska state law that allows for minors to consent to different activities or different issues under very different circumstances. And one of the circumstances that arises under that statute is when a minor is estranged from their parents and doesn't have a guardian or a parent that they are living with or who they have who is participating in their, you know, day-to-day life, that sort of thing. So there's that statutory provision, and then there's also the constitutional rights to privacy that have been set forth by the state Supreme Court that support providing certain information to minors under various circumstances. But that statute is what kind of governs that situation where a child is estranged from their parents or their custodians, that minors have the authority to consent to certain health care and other things, even though they're not technically of majority age. And I can get that statute for you quickly, but I can't pull it off to the top of my head right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We could take an IDs to...
There are statute books in the cabinet right behind.
Yes. All right, take a brief IDs. We are back on the record. I believe Ms. Carley from the Department of Law have the correct statute to reference for Senator Giesel's previous question.
Thank you, Chairman Wilson. For the record, Stacey Crayley with the Department of Law. The statute that I was referencing is Alaska Statute 2520025, subparagraph A1, which talks about a minor who is estranged essentially from their parents and the authority that they have under those circumstances.
Thank you. Senator Giesel.
So, Ms. Kralik, looking at that, subsection A, it specifically says that minor may give consent for medical and dental services for the minor. So it's limited to medical or dental.
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, I think the statute does contemplate that, but when you're looking at the services that may be provided, there would be potentially, you know, mental health services or other things like that. So I think it encapsulates a much broader spectrum than just health care and dental care. I think that the minor then has the ability to, you know, engage in services related to those events, which could include behavioral health and other services under that statute in those circumstances. Additionally, I just want to add, just for the record, that, you know, some of these children may be in the custody of the Office of Children's Services, and those, they would also have the ability to consent on behalf of the minors for different purposes in those circumstances if they were in these shelters.
Yes, Senator Geisel.
Thank you. And I certainly understand that if they were in foster care. My interest is in the minor themselves giving consent. So I'm looking at how this is applied. I know firsthand that estranged minors, that is an individual under the age of 18, is not permitted to access behavioral health services without the consent of parents. I know that's what clinicians won't serve them if they're under 18. So you're saying that it could be construed that they could still establish behavioral or mental health services, but it's not specified in the statute.
Through the chair, Senator Geisel, I think historically the statute has been read that healthcare has been construed from a statutory standpoint to include mental health care as well. Whether or not clinicians or other folks are willing to accept that consent is a completely different metric. I think that the statute contemplates the ability to make those sorts of decisions, whether or not a provider or somebody else would have that, would accept that consent is a different consideration. And I don't disagree with you that many probably would feel much more comfortable having a parental consent. In these instances too, in a runaway shelter, many of these children, we don't know, you know, they're not giving information. Other times parents are engaged in these processes and the children are at these facilities not because they want to be there or because their parents want them there, but that's what has happened. And so the parents are engaged in some of these cases as well. So they would be advised that their child was there. I think that's part of the, if you read through the rest of the statutes, there is notification to the parents and guardians and that sort of thing. So there's a mechanism for parents to be involved in some of this as well. So there's a range of options available to provide the authority to give this information.
Yes, Senator Geisel?
Well, I appreciate that, Ms. Kralik. At the same time, it's quite possible that the parents, while estranged from their child, may deny consent. And that's equally concerning, especially if the child has run away from home, is now seeking shelter, and the parent is denying access to health care, dental care, mental or behavioral health. So thank you for that clarification.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering what the sort of legal distinction is between a runaway shelter and a children's homeless shelter. That is there one? So you mentioned Covenant House, and I think of Covenant. There are a variety of reasons why youth end up at Covenant House. They're not all runaways by any means. So, in fact, I would guess that a majority aren't. And so is there a legal distinction? And if there is, this amendment that inserted all this stuff about sex and human trafficking, is it only for the runaway shelters or does it also apply to homeless shelters that serve children?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, this requirement is only applicable to licensed runaway shelters. So a homeless shelter that is providing services to minors in those circumstances would not have the same obligation, although they could provide this information. But we do not license homeless shelters. We license runaway shelters. And so this requirement is limited to those licensed providers.
Okay, so a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Dunbar.
So practically speaking, what differentiates a runaway shelter from a children's homeless shelter?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, the fact that one's licensed and one isn't, I mean, I don't know if there is a functional difference between them, but the policy of the legislature when these statutes were enacted decades ago was that we would have licensed runaway shelters for minors, and I know that homeless shelters and other types of entities and facilities provide a whole range of services for similar populations, but they're not required to be licensed by the Department of Family and Community Services or the Department of Health. Therefore, this requirement in and of itself would not be binding upon them. They could choose to do it, but it would not be legally binding on them.
Brief follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Dunbar.
So Covenant House is the one I'm most familiar with, coming from the Anchorage Assembly. Worked with them very closely with building the Mac House and things like that. Are they sort of voluntarily choosing to be a runaway shelter then? Could they just be a youth homeless shelter, but they've decided to take this additional sort of legal licensing burden on? Or are they not actually a runaway shelter? And I'm misunderstanding what these facilities are.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I don't know if they can do both. I don't know. For the services that they're providing for this population, they need to be licensed. Okay. Doesn't mean that every component of that facility is a licensed facility. And I don't believe that every component is a licensed facility. There's programs that need to be licensed in order to participate in different funding and grants and other things that are available to them. So parts of the facility are licensed. I don't believe every component of Covenant House is licensed. Or they may be licensed for something else.
Yeah.
And then runaway shelter. And then maybe they have three or four different, designations for the services that they provide.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And it looks like they're all in regulations. There's nothing that defines them in statute. And this is statute that's in here. That's reference 47.32.1010C. It just says the following entities are subject to this chapter and regulations adopted by the Department of Family and Community Health Service, Community Services, 1, child placement agencies, 2, foster homes, and 3, runaway shelters. And so it looks like it's regulatory guidelines on what makes up the determinations between those different differentiators. All right. Any further questions, conversations? Mr. Davidson, what's the timeline on this piece of legislation? How pertinent is it to serve a timeline on passage by the legislature?
Mr. Chairman, I think that it's obviously it was introduced by the governor very earlier in the session, and we are very interested in this passage. I think the key component today, we're not waiting on doing any of these activities based upon this legislation. But as Ms. Crayley has testified in previous, the HIPAA information sharing is vital. And we are operating under this kind of grace period, I think, after the EO, where we're kind of still working out. I mean, my office is still under construction. We're still working on the reorganization and how the duties are being split, and this cleanup is pretty vital to that. So we'd like to see it this session.
Thank you. Take a brief at ease here. All right, we are back on the record. Any closing comments you'd like to make?
Oh, thank you, sir.
All right. We'll go ahead and set a deadline for this piece of legislation for close of business Thursday, May 4th. And then we will not have a meeting then on May 4th and come back the following Tuesday, May 9th, for our next committee meeting, as this is our only piece of business that is in front of us for consideration. With that, are there any other closing comments from committee members? Seeing none, we are adjourned at 4:04 p.m.